every Wednesday at this time, we are joined by Doug Matthews. He's joining us today ahead of Greg Cosell at 12:15. Ryan Tannehill joins us live at 1 o'clock. And we go on the road with Coach Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. There's no need to consult the playbook. The winning play is to always designate a sober driver. Fans, don't let fans drive drunk. Brought to you by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Doug, good morning.
Good morning.
So, Doug, let's start here. We're seeing right now more than ever players taking matters into their own hands when it comes to what they want out of their college football programs and what they want out of the system. The latest is the Pac-12 with player demands, which include things like 50% of all revenue from football, voluntary drastic pay cuts from administrators and coaches, and the commissioner of the Pac-12, among many other things they're asking for. When you see that, what are your thoughts, and how do you think coaches in the Pac-12 responded to that when reading these demands?
Well, I don't think only coaches. I think any administrator at any level of the athletic world and also in the private world, in businesses, there's a huge difference between making requests, wanting to discuss things, asking that those things be looked at, and talking about it, and demanding. And where I can almost assuredly assure you from previous history, when you start demanding things, is when you start not getting what you really are set out to do. And I think that's what we're probably looking at now. There's no question. I don't think anyone, let's just take the college athletic world, some of the issues that have certainly been presented are issues that need to be discussed, and in all likelihood will be mitigated in some way. But when you start making demands about how to spend money, what to do, what to take down on a campus, all those different things, fight songs and stuff, players are not going to win that, because they're there for a short period of time. And one way to look at it, and the way that I look at it, is these university campuses have been developed their own history over 100 years or so. Forget about just the athletic part. Some of these universities, heck, the University of Tennessee was founded when 1894, right? And so it's 1794, excuse me. So they've been around a long, long time. I think most people would have a little sympathy with some of the requests, but when you start demanding, you start off right then, you've already antagonized the people that are really going to be making the decision. So this is going to be something that's going to be talked about a lot. I don't see anything happening in areas of demands, because quite frankly, most of the things that I've read, and I haven't spent a long time looking at, to be honest with you, they're things that aren't going to be accomplished anyway.
Well, and the story really developed, Coach, when Nick Rolovich, head coach at Washington State, was recorded in a conversation with one of his players, and he said, look, if it's for health concerns, you can sit out this year and not be around the team and keep your eligibility and stay on scholarship. But if it's for this reason, you can pack up your locker and leave campus and lose your scholarship and no longer be on the team, because he needs guys there that want to play football, and he's going to have to go find other players that want to do that if everyone on the team decides to go that route. What do you think of that stance from the coach, and what do you think of a player honestly thinking that they could not play football and still keep their scholarship if it's for any other reason besides health?
Well, here's a couple of things on that. Number one, if you are on scholarships, are year to year. They're pretty much 4 year, but they're year to year. But if a program takes a scholarship away from anybody, that athlete has an opportunity to go in front of a committee at the university. It doesn't happen very often, because they don't take scholarships away very often. So you could, once you show up, you're on scholarship the rest of that year, period, no matter what you're doing. But in this particular instance, and I looked at that pretty closely, I think the head coach is exactly right. Listen, if you don't want to play, fine. We understand that. You're going to be on scholarship. You can keep your scholarship this year. But what that young man was reported, and what I read, what he wanted to do, he wanted to be a part of the team, except he didn't want to go play any games. And the coach said, hey, you know, if that's the way that you want to go about it, then you're not going to be a part of the team. And that's what I think some of these young men and women, if it happens to happen in those sports, are going to find that, you know, you don't have a right to be on a team. You have a right if you have a contract, because all these are contracts, for a scholarship, but you don't have a right to be on a team. And I think that's what they're going to find out. And quite frankly, I'm glad to I don't know that coach. I'm glad to see coaches. And I think you're going to see a lot of that. As I started this segment of the show, no coach, no administrator is going to bow to any demand when it comes from a demand standpoint. If it's an issue that you want to discuss, fine. But they're barking up a big old tree that they're not going to get very high.
Well, and Coach, one thing that I actually agree with the players on in reading this list of, as you call, demands, and that's what they were, was one thing that really stuck out that I think all of college football could look into was the ability to come back to college if you're not drafted. If you declare for the NFL draft early and you're not drafted, they're asking for, I think, a 7-day window post-draft to decide what you want to do and that you could come back to college and play. I also know there's issues there with scholarships that are available based on considering someone's gone and then trying to come back. But what do you think about that ask from this list of what the Pac-12 is looking for in their players?
I think there's several things in there. But, you know, let's realize this. Most of the rules that are in place that involve professional, whether it be basketball, football, whatever, most of those rules are not put in by the universities and the colleges. They're put in by the pros. It's the NFL that doesn't want a player to join the league until 3 years after he graduates from high school. It's not the colleges that are doing it. Basketball, they're able to do it, but they have a rule in there that you have to be out 1 year in basketball. So it's the pro teams, the individual sports, basketball, football, and in some instances, baseball, that put those rules in. It's not the colleges. Listen, there's plenty of players out there that can play. And most of the really top players, I haven't seen a top player that is giving a list of demands. Now, we're having some top players. Penn State had the latest one that are going to opt out because of the NFL draft. So most of the people, young men in this instance, that are making most of these demands are players that really are average players anyway. So while they'll be listened to, they're not going to get any of them, I don't believe. I'll be shocked if they do.
Doug Matthews with us, and you can join him, 615-737-1045, our number. Coming up with Coach Matthews, we will discuss why the SEC waited until the end of September to begin their conference schedule, and we'll dive into that schedule. What might it look like? What is Doug hearing on that front, and who and how will they determine those extra conference opponents for the schedule? Doug Matthews, we are on the road with him each and every Wednesday, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Designate a sober game plan. If you've been drinking, don't drive. The Tennessee Highway Safety Office reminds you that fans don't let fans drive drunk. It's the Midday 180. We're queued up by Edley's Barbecue on 104.5 The Zone. Greg Cosell on the show in an hour, plus Ryan Tannehill at 1 o'clock. Midday 180, queued up by Edley's Barbecue. Doug Matthews with us as we broadcast live from Scoreboard Bar and Grill, site of our watch party. Predators and Coyotes face off at 1:30. We're sticking around after we go off the air at 2 to watch the game with you. You can join us here, 2408 Music Valley Drive. They're currently open for lunch. We're on the road with Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. Doug, why did the SEC wait until the end of September to begin their conference schedule? Something that you alluded to with us last Thursday. They made the announcement Thursday evening, and we then saw and discussed on Friday the fact that they were waiting to the end of September to kick off the season.
Well, I think there's several factors in there. One of the non-athletic factor is this. The presidents, and of course they had the athletic directors had voted to go to the 10-game schedule. The presidents the next day, last Thursday, voted that in, had a discussion on it. But, you know, they had already talked to their athletic director, so they knew exactly the direction that they were going to go in. Each school did. One of the big non-athletic reasons, Jonathan, to be quite frank, was is that they wanted to get students on campus, back on campus. Nobody really knows what's going to happen when that comes back on campus. I think all of us, I was talking with some friends of mine, it was many, many years ago when I was in college, but we all remember what college was like. And you don't sit in your hotel or your dorm room, you know, you're out seeing people, and we know that's going to happen. So they wanted to get that through. And then the other thing was, quite frankly, once they went to 10 ball games, that gave them a little bit of leeway. They moved the SEC championship game back 2 weeks. So now they have 12 and possibly 13 weeks to get in 10 ball games. So that if there is a chance, and there, I think there's a good chance that there will probably could be a game or two, probably that'll be postponed because of the COVID situation. So that was why they made that decision. And I think the fact that, as we mentioned last week, everybody, you're playing teams that are in the same conference, they're all under the same rules, they're all under, have the exact same procedures in place for the COVID-19 situation. If fans, depending on what happens there, they can work within the conference on that. So it just made it, it made a lot of sense and made it a lot easier. Listen, there were schools, all, certainly all four of the schools that play ACC teams at the end, in-state ACC opponents, certainly Tennessee, who wanted to play Oklahoma and other schools, certainly they wanted to play 11, but when it was all said and done, a 10 and an all-conference schedule seemed by far the best way to go.
Of course, 104.5 The Zone, your home for Tennessee Volunteer football this fall. Should I assume that we're going to hear Tennessee and Florida in week one of the conference schedule, or should I hold that thought?
I wouldn't assume anything right now on any of that, because I have been told that while some of that makes sense, it makes sense for the teams that have a game on their first game on the 26th. But I think we got something like 12 or 14 games that were scheduled before that start date. So conference games. So how are those going to be worked in? We know that the eight games that were scheduled already are going to be there, the four at home and the four away. We do not know when they're going to be played. And, of course, the two that will be added, obviously one will be a home game for each team and one will be an away game. And I think the other part of it is it plays a part in it right now. Now that the schedule has been set, or at least the games have been set, now the Southeastern Conference is with those media partners on what games are going to be broadcast when. And from a fan viewpoint, we're going to see some great football games all 10 weeks that we have the season.
Coach, when do you expect the SEC to come out with an announcement of the new schedule? Will it be late this week, next week? I know that they're one of the last now to announce, with the Big Ten announcing their full schedule this morning.
Well, that's right. But also, of course, the Big Ten is going to start September 3rd. The Southeastern Conference is going to start September the 26th. So that's one reason. I've not heard anything on that. I have kind of taken a good look on how they're probably going to choose those two teams. And one of the things that I think we need to keep in mind is this. All of the talk so far, or most of the talk so far on the websites and radio and folks like us, have been talking about who is Alabama and Georgia and LSU going to play, you know, because, you know, are they going to get the easier teams? Well, we can flip that over and also say, you know, who's Arkansas and Vanderbilt going to play? Those are the two seventh place teams in the league. So, you know, is it right for them to play the two strongest teams left on the other division because, you know, they were at the end of the conference? So the conference is looking at much more than just what's equitable and fair. It's not going to be equitable, and it's not going to be fair for everybody. Here's just real quickly, and fans can do this at home. What I sat down and did was I ranked each division 1 through 7 on how they finished in the conference. All right, best team in the East was Georgia. Worst team was Vanderbilt. Best team in the West was LSU, number one, Seven Angel from the non-division. And added the, like, let me just take, for example, Alabama is playing the number one team scheduled for the number one team already in the East in Georgia and the number three team in Tennessee. So if you add those together, you come up with four, the number four. On the other end, Texas A&M is playing the fourth best team last year in the Southeastern East and the seventh. So their number is 11. So they have a much easier schedule. So one way to look at it would be that way. If you're Alabama and you already, you may get two of them, A&M or maybe State or Mississippi. So I don't want to make this too complicated, but that's the way they're looking at it right now. And again, you know, you had three teams tie for fourth in the SEC. South Carolina, Kentucky, and Missouri all had 3-5 records. So how do you parse that out? One thing I want to add on this, and this would be one thing I would hope everybody would take away from this. Here's what I have been assured of, and I have to believe this is true. Athletic directors are going to have zero input on these last two game schedule. That is all going to be from the commissioner and whoever he picks in his office. It'll be done in-house in the SEC office for obvious reasons. All 14 athletic directors are going to try to get the very best, easiest schedule for themselves. So I've been assured of that they are boxed out of this. This is an SEC commissioner's decision. Again, he'll make the final decision. Those two teams will be assigned, and that will be the end of it. Now, we'll have a lot to complain about, as will fans, but coaches and athletic directors want, they know that going in. You're going to get who you're going to get.
Doug, was it just too easy to assume that they would just take the next two conference opponents on the schedule for the next 2 years and add them to the back end of the schedule? Did it even come close to being fair?
Well, it wouldn't be equitable. I don't know if it'd be fair or not. That's one reason. There's two reasons why they did that. Number one, why disrupt next year's schedule and the year after that? It'd be a little easier to disrupt the second year out. Let's just leave that the same and let's bring teams. Now, it may very well be that you may end up with one of those teams, but they're really working to try to figure out a formula that would be, you know, be, if you looked at the strength of last year, how the divisions ended, to try to make it equitable. But then you get into this other subject. LSU was by far the best team in the country and the best team in the West last year. Are they going to be coming into this year with all they've lost? So do you factor that in? But bottom line, I think they'll do as good a job as they can on evaluating that. They're going to put it out there. And I believe this commissioner is a strong, strong commissioner. And he comes out of that meeting with the presidents. He has the full backing of those presidents. Everybody's going to have a complaint. But hey, this is what you get. You know, what's the old saying they tell the kids now in grade school? You get what you get. You don't pitch a fit, right?
Well, sometimes they do. Doug Matthews joins us weekly, each Wednesday. And you can hear him each weekend, Saturday morning, 9 to 11, Forklift Systems Football. Saturday, the best hour-long discussion on Tennessee athletics. Sunday morning, 8 o'clock with Big Orange Sunday.
So we've kind of debated Big Ten versus SEC in terms of start date. SEC waiting seemingly until initial campus arrival and everything settles down. Big Ten starting earlier, buying itself some flexibility along the way. To reschedule and shuffle things as it goes. Neither one right, obviously, at this stage. One of them may turn out to look right down the road. I like the idea of the flexibility along the way, personally. I'm wondering what your thinking is at this stage.
I think those are exactly the reasons. I do think, too, Paul, that one thing with the Big Ten was that the fact that, you know, the later you push things into late November, December, a couple of weeks in December, you have a weather issue, a little bit, certainly more of a weather issue than the teams down the South would have. I think that was part of it. But no, I think if you really look and listen, and I've tried to listen to what all these commissioners are saying, not so much what the coaches are saying or athletic directors, but the commissioners, because they're looking at the big picture. As I said, every coach and every athletic director, you know, they're what's their job? Their job is to do everything they can for their school. But if you look at what these commissioners have said, I do think most of it has to do with the fact that as we sit here and talk and everybody listen to this, we simply don't know what's going to happen from the COVID situation going forward. And I'll tell you this from a couple of people that I'm very fond of and know what they're talking about. There is more talk than ever now about exactly can we even get a 10-game schedule in whenever we start it. And so what most of these leagues have tried to do, they've tried to push it back as far as they can to hopefully get a little bit more clarity on the medical situation. And they're really doing more hoping now than anything else. And let's just take one quick issue. There's not an athletic director out there that can tell you how many fans are going to be able to put in the stands. They don't know. And they don't have to make that decision quite right now. So I think all of that plays into it. But from your point, I do think that's why. And essentially the Big 12 is doing the same thing. We're only playing 10 or in a couple of cases, 11 games. Let's have a 14, 15 week period that we can move these things around if we want to. And one final thought on that, you know, if they're putting that in the scheduling, they're also anticipating that very well could happen. There could easily be some games postponed and moved to a later date.
Doug, I know you mentioned that we're not going to see the ADs have an impact on this schedule that the commissioner's office puts out. How much of an impact do you think TV will have? How much of input do you think they'll have on this?
Who will have on TV? I don't think they'll have a whole lot on it, quite frankly, because you're going to get good ball games. I mean, there's going to be, there's five teams in each division that you're not playing, right? You're playing two of them. Well, 40% of those five remaining teams you're going to pick up. So you're going to have some big ball games. And, hey, we're going to have some, I think, monster games, because when those games happen are probably going to be a little bit later in the schedule. Who knows who's going to come out? Maybe Florida will be undefeated. Heck, maybe Ole Miss or Mississippi State will get on a run. Maybe A&M. So when we get to that last half of that schedule, we may have some huge games that we normally do not have. I'll say this. I don't see any way. Well, I guess there's a way. But when you're playing 10 conference games, it's unusual to go through this league undefeated anyway. I think you could very easily see a one or a two, maybe a couple of two lost teams win their division and end up playing in Atlanta. And I think you could see that very easily, because the West is still strong and the East is much stronger. And you have many more teams that are capable, fully capable of beating the other team, especially when you're going to have a tough, strong game every week.
So we've talked about the advantages of keeping it conference only, like you see with the Pac-12, with the Big Ten, with the SEC, and how you can regulate it. Completely opposite approach from the AAC, the American Athletic Conference, who today announces that they're going to play their 8-game conference season and then allow for whatever every other team wants to do. You can schedule as many non-conference games as you can get and play them wherever you want. You could have one non-conference game, none, or you could have up to four. So every team in that conference is going to have a different amount of games. What do you think about that approach, Doug?
Well, novel approach, and we know this. It just makes common sense that all of those non-Power Five, and certainly probably the Group of Five would be next. But those schools that I'm not putting them all in the same category, but an Eastern Kentucky, an MTSU, a Tennessee State, an Austin Peay. Those are scrambling for non-conference games right now. And the good thing for them is there's a lot of it's kind of like going to a big dance. There's a lot of people out there that are looking for somebody to dance with too. So if you can get that matched up, married up, all the better. And I think that's the one the one area that's still going to be, it's going to be kind of like the wild, wild west there. But listen, there's a, you take BYU, just look at BYU. They're not even in conference. Look at the academies, you know, Army and Navy, they're the Patriot League is not even playing. So they got to find however many games they're going to play. Certainly they'll play amongst themselves. So I think it's all good. I really do. But again, it's all going to be determined by what this medical situation looks like somewhere starting right around the 1st of September.
Bad, bad story coming out of Colorado State, where it's been reported that multiple players are saying they've been instructed by coaches to not report symptoms, to lie about positive test results, and that there were going to be repercussions if they don't follow through with what the coaches are asking. You got the story of Virginia Tech with a player opting out because he said the school isn't doing the right thing. He said that they had an indoor facility workout with 100 players packed into a place with no masks on. And the response to that from a lot of people is, well, this doesn't surprise me at all with college football coaches that they're doing that. But, Doug, knowing the coaching community the way you do, specifically in the SEC, do you think that most coaches out there are trying to do the right things with this and aren't going out of their way to try to circumvent any protocols that are in place from the state or the schools in which they coach?
Well, I would certainly think so. I mean, number one, do you think any those schools you mentioned are Power Five conference schools that get covered by a lot of people? Do you think in this day and age of Twitter, social media, all those things, that you could do something like that and keep it under in-house? Now, my guess is that probably, maybe, I shouldn't say probably, some assistant coach said that, but there's no way a head football coach or an athletic director would make that statement, because that's going to cost you your job. And of course, I kind of started the show with this. Listen, if you want to opt out, if you don't want to play, there's an avenue to do that. But to leave, you know, just, I don't know if you're probably not going to get into the kicker from Vanderbilt, who I don't think was ever on campus, quite frankly, probably was, but wasn't in school. You know, if you're going to leave, well, just go ahead and leave, but don't cast aspersions on nobody over here cares about medically and all that stuff, because that's simply not true. It's just simply not true.
Doug, real quick, outside of the SEC discussion, I'd like to ask about MTSU from this perspective. They're in a conference that doesn't get much of in regards to television revenue to begin with. ACC's not playing them, so they're losing out on Duke. They were scheduled to host Virginia Tech. Those games are gone. UConn is on their schedule. UConn has announced they're not playing football this year.
What's left?
Is it worth to play the conference slate in a Conference USA or a Sun Belt league where you're not getting much at the gate anyway? And if you do open, and that's if you're allowed to have fans, on top of the travel, and again, the lack of TV coverage to begin with, is it worth playing?
Well, if you're asking me, it certainly is. But and let me just say this too, you know, when we talk about budgets, the one I guess in a backhanded way, good thing about those smaller schools are they weren't getting hardly any money out of TV anyway, and most of them did not get a whole lot of money out of fans. You know, I know MTSU is a good example. I read where they were talking about not significant, but a lot of their funding comes from, you were one of them, a student fees. So, you know, they're not going to put 30, 40, 50,000 people in a stadium. They're not going to be making, you know, millions of dollars off TV contract. They're playing and keeping their sports going, I think, just because that's part of the university life. So more power to them. I hope that they can do that. And again, as I mentioned, there's a lot of dance partners out there to dance with. So you can find some games to play if you're willing to kind of move your schedule around and be energetic about it and be smart on who you schedule, because there's going to be a lot of ball games. Let's just take the teams in Tennessee. If you look about all the states that surround this state, there's going to be a lot of teams that are looking for games to play that you can get to very, very easily. So I think we'll see more of that. And again, we're all kind of sitting to just wait and see what the medical situation is.
Doug Matthews, presented by the Tennessee Highway Safety Office. How did it go with the chief? and I don't mean Paul Koharski, I mean John Chavis. And tell us what you have coming up this weekend.
I think Saturday show, we're going to talk a lot about now. We're also going to look at the SEC practices. But John Chavis is going to do this week what I really asked him to do on the show. He's going to take a look at the SEC West offensive play callers and talk about what is the most difficult thing to do when you're playing a Jimbo Fisher coach team offense, a Gus Malzahn offense. And the reason he can do that is because he spent 25 years of doing that every single week in this conference. So I think they'll find that interesting. And Charles Davis this Saturday, going to dig really in deep into player demands and the history. You can go back many, many, many years. When players start making demands, what's the history of that? And I'll tell you this, it ain't good for the players.
We'll be listening. Doug, thank you.
You bet. Talk later.